Exciting to be here today. There's been all kinds of stuff going on. Kids running around hunting for Easter eggs and the brunch that went on over there and just the worship. It's been a really good time. Today, the message I have for you is, He must reign. And it's taken from 1 Corinthians chapter 15, verses 20 through 28. And what I would like to do is, I want to read them for you. And they're found in your bulletin, so you don't necessarily have to look them up. It's found right there. And you can follow along if you would like. Thank you, Don. I can actually read this, kind of. I practice during the week, and I was up there practicing. Maybe what I need to do is up here, I get a little more light. I can see. Yeah, I see a lot easier. I'm going to read it from up here, but I'm going to go down there when I'm done. It says, "But Christ has indeed been raised from the dead, the first fruits of those who have fallen asleep. For since death came through a man, the resurrection of the dead comes also through a man. For as in Adam all die, so in Christ all will be made alive, but each in his turn. Christ the first fruits, then, when he comes, those who belong to him. Then the end will come, when he hands over the kingdom to God the Father, after he has destroyed all dominion, authority, and power. For he must reign until he has put all his enemies under his feet. The last enemy to be destroyed is death, for he has put everything under his feet. Now when it says that everything has been put under him, it is clear that it does not include God himself, who put everything under Christ. When he has done this, then the Son himself will be made subject to him who has put everything under him, so that God may be all in all." One of the most heart-wrenching words in the human language is the word closed. You plan for days to take the family to the zoo. The kids are all excited. Go ahead, call the next one. Dad has taken time off. Mom has a special lunch packed. You drive half an hour, and the sign at the gate says, "Closed." Just like the proverb says, hope deferred makes the heart sick. You're 11 years old. It's summertime. And the Little League baseball teams are beginning to practice. "Mommy, can I play baseball this year?" You get a new glove. Daddy pitches with you in the backyard. You practice with the team for 2 weeks. But there are too many players. Some have to be cut. One afternoon, the coach reads off the roster, and you're not on it. The coach says, "Next year they'll plan on having two teams." And you cry all the way home. Closed. Perhaps you dream from the time that you are 13 about the one that you will marry, about the thrill of falling in love, the beauty of the wedding day, the utter release and peace of being held by the one who loves you above all others. And the door closes again and again. Or perhaps you come to your mid-40s and you step back and you take stock of your life and all the things that you want to accomplish, and you decide to stay with the firm and give it your best shot. And in 5 years, after hundreds of late nights, long weekends, and working vacations, you're passed over for the promotion, and the door closes on the dream of your career. Or perhaps, just perhaps, all your career doors are open. All of the doors of your relationships are open. You have made every team that you have ever tried out for. And now the doctor says that you have cancer or AIDS or some other terminal illness. And all the doors start to close. Or worst of all, perhaps you made it to the top of your career. Perhaps you have had the relationship of your dreams. Perhaps you have been healthy every single day of your life. And one open door after another. But the journey through all of those open doors has been a journey without Jesus Christ. And now you have died and you stand before heaven and it's closed. And you cry out, Lord, Lord, open to me. But he replies, truly, I say to you, I do not know you. It is a heartbreaking word, both in this life and in the next. Closed. But now, the point of Easter and the resurrection of Jesus from the dead is that God is in the process of clearing this world of all heartbreak. And the opening of the closed tomb of Jesus is the first step in a campaign to throw open 10 million doors of hope for people who will trust him. The phrase that I want us to focus on this morning from the text that I read is in 1 Corinthians chapter 15, 25. It says, he must reign until he has put all his enemies under his feet. Jesus must reign. And I want us this morning to ponder four things about this reign. All of them under the heading of open. The opposite of closed. Open. In fact, it even spells out open. The opening of the reign of Christ, the presence of the reign of Christ, the extent of the reign of Christ, and the necessity of the reign of Christ. I want us to take this word open this morning and write it in large letters over the doors of disappointment in your life. Not that the risen, reigning Christ will make you a first-string baseball player or give you your dream spouse or your career advancement or perfect health, but that he will turn the closed door of disappointment into an entryway to glory. I want you this morning, from the bottom of your heart, by an act of faith, no matter how dark the room is that you are in, to write the word open on the wall beside every closed door of your life. Picture this. The disciples, behind the locked door of fear on that Easter Sunday morning, in John chapter 20, verse 19, it says, on the evening of that day, the first day of the week, the doors being closed. Some versions say locked, some say shut. The doors are closed. Where the disciples were, for fear of the Jews, Jesus came and stood among them and said to them, peace be with you. Surely the implication of this Easter story for our lives today is this. When the door of hope has been closed and we are locked in a dark room and we can see no exit for us and no entrance for God, the risen, reigning Christ is not limited to human doors. What is impossible with man is possible with God. The door was shut and Jesus was suddenly in their midst. There is a hidden door of hope in the waiting room of faith. Therefore, I urge you this morning to write in capital letters over every closed door of your life, open. And then be like the psalmist in Psalms 130, where it says, I wait for the Lord, my soul waits, and in his word I do hope. My soul waits for the Lord more than the watchman for the morning. More than the watchman for the morning. And the waiting of faith will be rewarded. The great word of the resurrection is open, because Jesus Christ must reign until he has put all his enemies under his feet. And if you trust him, Your enemies are his enemies. And no door of disappointment will be able to close you up in darkness. So let's begin. Number one there, write a great big O for the opening of the reign of Christ. Was the Son of God reigning over the world before he took on human flesh and was born of a virgin and lived among us as Jesus of Nazareth? Yes, he was. John chapter 1, verses 1 and 2 tells us that he was reigning in the beginning with the Father and that all things were made through him. And without him was not anything made that was made. And Hebrews chapter 1, verses 1 through 3 tells us that the world was created through him and that he upholds the universe by the word of his power. Now, it makes no sense to say that a person created the universe and upholds it by the word of his power, but that that person has no kingly right or might over it. And so, we must say that Christ has always reigned over the world in one sense. So, was the beginning of his reign at the beginning of creation or at his resurrection from the dead? Well, there are at least three things new about the reign of Christ since the resurrection and exaltation. Since the resurrection, Christ is now the God-man. He has taken humanity onto himself, which he had never done before. And now he rules not merely as Son of God, but also as Son of Man. Second, as the God-man, he has now been openly declared to be the Messiah, the Christ, who will fulfill all of the promises of God, and he will sit on the throne of his father, David, as a legal heir. Before the incarnation, Christ was king over the world, incognito, kind of hiding as it were. And during his 33 years, he was still incognito, except for a few who had the eyes to see. But now he is openly declared to all the world as Christ and Lord, which means Messiah and King. It is no secret now, Jesus is the Lord. The third thing that is different about the reign now is that it is based on his finished work, the work of redemption for the forgiveness of sins on the cross, which means that in this age, the word of the king is the word of the cross. His reign is primarily a saving reign. Judgment has been delayed. The king reigns in a day of grace. So in a very real sense, the reign of Christ, the God-man, the Messiah, the Lord, it began at his resurrection. Or more exactly, at his exaltation, which was 40 days after his resurrection when he went up to be with the Father. This was the public inauguration, as it were, of the one who came from the throne of glory, took on human flesh, died for human sinners, conquered death, and ascended back to the throne with a human nature and with a sealed covenant that his people are redeemed. Peter put it like this on that first Pentecost sermon. This Jesus God raised up, and that we are all witnesses. Let all of the house of Israel know, therefore, assuredly, that God has made him both Lord and Christ, this Jesus whom you crucified. You see, this is the O over the door of disappointment this morning. The opening of the reign of Christ was his resurrection from the dead. What could be more hopeful behind the closed doors of disappointment than that the reign of Christ opened with an open grave? Now, number two, write the P. The presence of the reign of Christ. There are a lot of people, I think, who have this idea of the reign of Christ over the world will begin once he returns and puts all of his enemies under his feet. But this text that we've read kind of says the exact opposite. He must reign until he has put all his enemies under his feet. What does that little word until mean? Well, it means two things. First, it means that Christ is reigning now. He rose from the dead, ascended to heaven, and sat at the right hand of God. His kingdom does not begin at the second coming. When Christ comes again, there will be a thunderclap of great victory in his reign over evil. You can see it in verse 23. At his coming, those who belong to Christ will be raised from the dead. But that thunderclap of victory will not be the beginning of the reign. His reign is underway right now. The other thing that word until means is that Christ's kingly warfare against his enemies is going on right now. In other words, his reign is not passive. If a baseball player gets injured and the coach wants to take him out of the game, but this player says, "No, I am playing until we win." You know two things about that player. You know that he is playing right now, and you know that he is playing to win. So when Paul says that Jesus must reign until he has put all his enemies under his feet, then we know two things. Christ is reigning now, and Christ is reigning to win. Isn't that what Jesus said in Matthew 28, 18? "All authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. Therefore, go and make disciples of all nations." In other words, I am the rightful king over all the peoples of the earth. I have triumphed over the devil and the powers of darkness on the cross. Now you are my ambassadors. Go and call everyone, everywhere, to turn from sin and accept me as the king. Master, it is my pleasure. The reign of Jesus Christ is present, not just in the future and not just distant. And his aim is to defeat his enemies and put them under his feet. If the enemies of your happiness are the enemies of Christ, then you can take heart that Christ will fight for you with all of his kingly power. He is moving in this world in his own way and in his own time to subdue his enemies. Granted, there will always be people who will scoff as they did to Peter in 2 Peter chapter 3, verses 3 through 7, and hopefully once we get back, we'll start a series in 2 Peter, where they given something like this. People will always scoff. If Jesus can't defeat his enemies and establish his kingdom in 2,000 years, then he can't ever do it. And the whole thing is probably just one great big myth. But they forget that with the Lord, 1,000 years is as one day. And they forget that God's battle strategies are not our battle strategies. Remember Gideon? And they forget that God's timing is not our timing. Remember the 400 years in Egypt because the sins of the Amorites were not yet completed? And they forget that the Father has fixed the times and seasons by his own authority, and that Jerusalem will be trodden down until the times of the Gentiles are complete. O people of God, let us believe God rather than exalt our opinions against him. Christ is reigning now, not just in the past, not just in the future. You see, that is the P over the door of disappointment this morning. O for the opening of the reign of Christ at the resurrection, and P for the presence of his reign here and now to defeat his enemies. Now put the letter E at 3. E for the extent of the reign to every whiff of opposition in the universe. So how far does the reign of Christ extend? Verse 25 says that he must reign until he has put all his enemies under his feet. The word all tells us. So does the word every in verse 24, which reads like this. Then comes the end, when he delivers the kingdom to God the Father after destroying every rule and every authority and power. There is no disease, no addiction, no demon, no bad habit, no fault, no vice, no weakness, no temper, no moodiness, no pride, no self-pity, no strife, no jealousy, no perversion, no greed, no laziness, and no friends with benefits that Christ does not aim to overcome as the enemy of his honor. And the encouragement in that is that when you set yourself to do battle with the enemies of your faith and your holiness, you will not fight alone. Christ will fight with you. Jesus Christ is now, in this age, putting all his enemies under his feet. Every rule, every authority, every power will be conquered. So when you write the E over the open door of your disappointment, remember that the extent of Christ's reign reaches to the smallest and to the biggest enemy of his glory. It will be defeated. Now finally, write the letter N, number 4. The reign of Christ opens with his resurrection. It is present here and now to defeat his enemies. Its extent is universal over every enemy of his glory and all opposition to his will. And its necessity is rooted in the absolute right of God, the Father, to be the one where all glory terminates. Notice in the text, the word must. In verse 25, it says, he must reign until he has put all his enemies under his feet. Why must he? Where does the necessity come from? Well, verse 27 says it comes from God the Father. It says, for God has put all things in subjection under his feet. And what is the Father's goal in subjecting all things to Christ? First, that the Son uses his authority to redeem a people for himself from every tribe and tongue and nation. Second, that he defeat the enemies of God. And finally, third, that he draws all attention, all glory back to the Father. Every knee shall bow and every tongue confess that Jesus Christ is Lord to the glory of God the Father. The city will have no need of sun or moon to shine upon it, for the glory of God is its light, and its lamp is the Lamb. And so I urge you, each one of you this morning, to write the reign of Christ over every closed door of your life open. Open at the resurrection, present in power here and now, extending over every enemy of his glory and of our joy. And as necessary, as the all-permeating deity of God. The last enemy defeated, the victory won, the church redeemed, and the Lord Jesus himself exalted in majesty. He turns to the Father and he bows his head, and then comes the end. And the beginning, when God the Father is the final focus of all praise and blessing and honor and glory. Forever and ever. Amen.